Did you see the stylish kids in the riot? Shoveled up like mocks, set the night on fire, wombles bleed, truncheons and shields. You know I cherish you, my love.
Welcome to the Young IPA Podcast. I'm James, this is Pete.
Yo!
It is episode 100. I'm not dealing with that. Episode 100.
I thought I'd change it up for the 100th episode.
Well, change it back.
Didn't feel good.
And it is March the 12th. We've got a big show for you guys coming up. It is the 100th episode. Very excited about that. We're going to be talking to Tom McDonald, full forward for the Melbourne Demons. Bit of a, you know, left turn for us. We don't really... It's our second athlete we've ever had on the show, so out of the ordinary. Apart from the athletic prowess that is Peter Gregory, day in, day out. And we're also going to be talking to our boss, IPA Executive Director John Roskam, talking about just reflections on the IPA's digital transformation, what it's doing for the future. And we also get his thoughts on Brexit and the coalition at the moment. But anyway, Pete, big episode for us.
Oh, look, it is a big episode. It's been a great time to do the podcast. You know, it's been a funnest thing I do at work.
This is actually the most heartfelt thing Peter Gregory's ever said to anyone.
That was
the most look into his soul that anyone has ever seen. So I'm glad I got to experience that with the listeners.
No, definitely the funnest thing I do at work. And thanks to everyone for listening.
It's just pouring out of you at the moment.
It feels really unnatural.
Nina, save us from this. Do you have any reflections on the 100th episode?
How long have we been here?
Okay, let's get out of this immediately. All right, let's talk about some of the stories that have been happening this week. So, Pete, you want to start off with a bit of per capita budget chat.
Oh, yeah.
My favourite kind of chat.
There's nothing like a bit of per capita chat. It's better than normal chat. Now, James asked me to do this one because he didn't quite get it. So, I'll explain.
I dropped out of maths in year 10 and never looked back. So,
Yeah, because I'm such a mathematician, but we'll see.
Well, you can count to five, and that's pretty impressive to me, so talk to me your words.
I'll explain it, and we'll see. We'll check in with James later to see if he's got it. So Daniel Wald featured in the Oz, and obviously, hey, what did I miss last week, about the fact that Australia's had its third per capita recession in the last 28 years. So obviously, you always hear about how Australia hasn't had a recession for 28 years, like a lot of other countries have, but we haven't. Per capita, we have. Now, of course, GDP is the common measure on whether or not you've had a recession. And on that basis, yes, we haven't had a recession for 28 years, but of course GDP always increases when the population goes up, and Australia's population has increased a lot during that period through immigration. So when you measure that on a per capita basis, actually Australia has dipped into recession three times during that period, and recession is two negative quarters of growth in a row. Got it?
So let's theoretically say, and I'm still struggling with this one.
Okay.
That is to say that Australia as a whole is still growing, but if you look at people's individual wealth, that's actually starting to decline.
Their share of the GDP, yep.
I got it.
It's not declining. It's just in recession at the moment. So last week it entered into recession for the third time in 28 years.
Yeah. So when we talk about how the Australia needs to fix its budget, we can always sound like we're stretching a little because Australia's growing, but actually it's not growing as much as you think it is. And there are needs that does need to be change.
That's exactly right, James. That's really well said. As Dan wrote in his article, things are not going as well as they think they are. We're in massive debt. We're obviously, Australia is an exporting country. We're vulnerable to overseas shocks, and it would be a bad turn now. It would really hurt us because we are so exposed with our debt. Obviously, the government needs to focus on productivity, lower taxes, lower energy costs, and, of course, cutting red tape.
Good. All right, let's get something on. Let's get back onto a track that I'm good with, which is freedom of speech and freedom of association. Now, this was the big story for me last week, which was Milo Yiannopoulos, internet provocateur, not the greatest guy in the world, certainly not an event I would go to, but he was denied a visa because of fears of security that if he came to Australia, they would incur. So he was denied a visa for his upcoming speaking tour. They've now gone back on that. Shout out to Tim Wilson, James Patterson, and Amanda Stoker, who did seem to be the driving forces behind reversing the government's decision to ban the visa. It is still beyond disgusting to me that he was denied a visa at all.
Wow.
Well, seriously, like, look, again, Milo Yiannopoulos, I'm not going to have him on the show. I'm definitely not going to go to the event, and I'm definitely not going to say hi if we run into each other in a cafe. But, like, to just say, you know, we're worried there's going to be protests if you come, so don't come, is just basically abandoning freedom of speech and just saying, okay, if you heckle enough and if you put up enough of a protest, you do win.
Well, that's right. And based on The criteria they can use for not letting someone in, into the country is, and I quote, incite discord in the Australian community. It's like anything can incite discord.
Yeah.
I mean, you incite discord.
I do, often.
Just who you are and what you do.
My values, my approach to life.
So it's, I find it weird that things can be knocked back on that basis. I also say that Penny Wong did her best John Howard Tampa crisis impersonation when she said, I think we can decide who we want to come into Australia. Yep. And it's like, now where have I heard that before? Interesting when the shoe's on the other foot that the, that's exactly what she would say. And I think that also she doesn't quite understand how this works.
Yeah, exactly.
No, the government doesn't decide what opinions we can hear, actually. That's not how this works.
Well, apparently they do. Or apparently, more closer to the point, freedom of speech in Australia isn't set by the government. It's set by a radical bunch of protesters. That's they can decide who comes in and who doesn't. It's pretty gross. And again, credit to Tim Wilson, James Patterson, and Amanda Stoker. They're probably not going to be the governing party in 4 months' time. So that's pretty concerning that there's now a precedent of like, well, you guys tried to shut down Milo Yiannopoulos. We can shut down this speaker as well. We're worried about discord.
That's exactly right. So it's that kind of precedent. Of course, Milo still owes Vic Pol $50,000 for the protest last time. So
I don't think they're going to see it.
Well, I hope they don't see it.
I hope they don't see it.
That's ridiculous that you can just go and protest and damage property and then the...
Well, it's your fault.
The police will send it to the people then.
It's your fault you got attacked, is the Victorian police's official policy.
I would also say that kind of ban plays into his hands as like saying this dangerous stuff that no one else will say.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like getting Alex Jones kicked off Twitter and iTunes and all that stuff, which is like, this is exactly what he wanted. Because he got in the news and now he's got the visa. So Milo goes like, they try to shut me down, I'm coming anyway.
Yep.
It looks good for Milo. So the government really played into Milo's hands. Much as, you know, YouTube made Alex Jones seem like he could turn back to his followers and say, look, I'm right, I'm shutting it down.
Yep.
I nearly did an Alex Jones impersonation. No one wanted to hear that and no one deserves to hear
that. I wouldn't have minded.
Well, maybe off air. Let us talk. All right, so we got a Brexit update for you.
Yep.
So it's a Brexit update in that apparently it's a really big week for Brexit, but also it doesn't seem like anything's happening, which is basically the experience of the last 2 years. But anyway... right now, Theresa May, she's meeting with Juncker, I think, as we're recording
literally
this.
Literally as we speak.
So the second most important conversation in the world right now is happening somewhere in Europe, where Theresa May is sitting down with Juncker. She's trying to resuscitate the Brexit deal with all the backstops and all the things that they're being held up with. I don't think it's going to happen. Just something about Juncker makes me seem like he doesn't exactly want Brexit to go ahead. Mm. So I don't think he's in a position to start going, okay, well... You know, you've asked politely, so here are my concessions. Because another vote's coming up for Parliament, which is the latest Brexit deal.
Tomorrow.
So, yes, well done, Pete. And if that fails, there's going to be another vote for a no-deal Brexit. And if that fails, they're going to try and trigger an extension of Article 50, which is the Brexit terms, which would mean Brexit is delayed another 3 months. Please chime in if I'm not getting this right.
No, this is good. I've actually got the timeline in front of me, and you're not... stuffing it up.
Thank you very much. Can I get that looped out and played back to me when I feel bad? Anyway, so theoretically, a very big week for Brexit, and we should probably go around the table right now of predictions. I reckon Article 50 gets extended. Call me crazy, but I think they'll try and delay things.
I think obviously this vote probably won't get up, and then I think the no deal vote won't get up.
Yeah.
And then so as you say, Article 50 will be extended. But I don't think that's a bad thing because I think eventually we'll get a no deal. And then, as I kept saying, no deal, no worries, because it sounds funny.
Yeah, you did get that tattooed across your chest.
Yeah, what about you, Nina?
Which was strange, but I like it.
Yeah.
Nina, do you have any predictions?
I don't have any predictions. I will just wait and see what's happening.
That's not fun. Nina's doing this is a hot take industry. You need to come out with the predictions.
Well,
and then,
the thing is, like,
wrong,
I just
want to
know,
it.
Like, I'll just wait. Until what's happening.
Yeah.
Because, like, you don't know what they're talking about.
That's a no prediction.
This is why Nina never got her own show on Sky News. Not enough hot takes.
They keep asking.
Anyway, I want to bring you to this article which appeared in the UK Sun, which is talking about the incurred costs of Brexit if it goes ahead. Mm-hmm. So, British taxpayers face paying double its EU divorce bill if they extend Brexit. So basically, they've already agreed to pay $39 billion if they stay an extra 4 months, if they delay Brexit again, $39 billion, and they might slap an extra $6.5 billion on top of that. So What this means is Britain could not hire 20,000 police officers or train 43,000 teachers, recruit tens of thousands of medics and build a super hospital. And I ran the numbers back again, and you could also pay for two Liam Fox podcasts for people to listen last week.
Yeah.
That's another two podcasts, Pete, from that man about Brexit deals and how to negotiate international trade.
Yeah, another, that would be somewhere in the vicinity of 16,000 downloads, I believe.
Would have been
excellent.
The thing they needed. So hopefully it goes ahead, because if the world needs one thing, it is Liam Fox podcast content.
Well, that really flies in the face of my, an extension is not a bad thing. So thanks for those stats, James.
Thank you. All right. That's all I've got for Brexit. Do you have anything more to say?
No.
All right.
I'm going to keep my powder dry. I'm just trying to find the right page for the next bit.
Okay. Well, so this is going to be the fact about how much people are willing to pay for climate change.
Well, look, it's always a good tactic when you're having a discussion with someone and they say the government should spend money on X, because often people don't seem to realise that the government spending money on X is actually them spending money on X. So
wait, so you're saying when people say college should be free, it's not actually free?
That's what I'm suggesting, James.
How dare you?
So people don't seem to realise that they have to pay for it. So to ask them how much they have to, how much they'd be willing to put towards a certain thing is always a good idea. AP Nork, which is an interesting named company, did a survey in the United States that it might be NORC, but I'm going to call it AP Nork. Survey finds
that should be a new survey. Is it a funny name or not? Yes or no?
It's like Orc from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. Nerd.
Yeah, right. Movies are cool.
I never get to spring this one on Pete. It's always one-way traffic, so any chance I get.
So they did a survey.
Come on, college boy.
68% of Americans wouldn't be willing to pay $10 a month or more for electricity bills, or extra on top of their electricity bills, to fight climate change. So 80% of the energy Americans use is from fossil fuels. And to achieve things like the Green New Deal, every building in the United States and would have to be upgraded or improved, would obviously cost every household in America thousands of dollars to achieve.
So not $10 more a month.
No, and so the 68% of Americans saying they wouldn't pay $10 or more a month is not a good sign for people who are hoping to get elected on the back of a Green New Deal.
Yeah, it's always a classic thing. Like, I think Reason found this in a survey as well. If you ask a bunch of young people, do you want the government to pay for more things? It's yes. And it's like, okay, are you willing to pay higher taxes? No.
Mm.
No.
Well.
Tax rich people, though.
Yeah. They'll pay companies. It's always companies.
Yeah.
They don't realise that companies pay more taxes. They hire less people. So a couple of weeks ago, we featured a poll in Hey, What Did I Miss? Which showed that climate change is a low priority for voters in America compared to a whole range of other things like, I don't know, the economy.
Yeah.
Even stuff like poor people and, healthcare and education and all those things. So it isn't as big a priority as legislators or some legislators wish it would be. And as one of my standing policies here on the podcast, James, is the tick box. I don't have many policies, but this is one of them. I reckon we should have a tick box.
Yep.
With all the things on it that probably aren't that necessary. And if people want to pay for them with their taxes, they can.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like sport, which is obviously close to my heart.
Yep.
Art.
Liam Fox podcast.
Liam Fox podcast should have its own tick box.
It's already marked in. Yeah. So who doesn't want them?
Yeah. Public, whatever it is. And if people want to pay for it, that's fine.
Yeah.
Tick box it up. That's my policy.
That's your policy. Pete, the first person to spend 100% of his taxes on improving the MCC.
Oh, nice. Maybe. I like the grounds more when they're a bit dishevelled, so I actually wouldn't pay for stadium improvements. But anyway, I digress.
You do digress indeed. All right, cool. We'll now go to our interviews. But before we do, pretty big week for the IPA. Head on over to ipa.org.au for anything that you may have missed, including last week's Looking Forward podcast, a really good chat between Scott Hargraves, Chris Berg, the two hosts, and they were joined by Daniel Wild and Andrew Bushnell.
It's Dr. Chris Berg.
Dr. Chris Berg, I'm sorry. I'm going to be paying for that dearly. I'm not. But so they talk a lot about, is limited government finished? Should conservatives be using the arm of the state to influence, what's the word I'm looking for here?
Intervention.
So should they be using the arm of the state to interfere with like the ABC or through all these other things because the left are doing it anyway? Like what is the path forward? Really interesting chat there. They also talk about drug law reform as well. So if any of those topics are stuff you want to hear more about, some really good debate action going down at Looking Forward.
It is. And there's sort of like people on either side in that debate as well. So it's not it's interesting listen.
Yeah. The IPA is a broad church and we keep it respectful, but there are disagreements. So Also, at the ipa.org.au, you can read a lot of articles, including John Roskam coming up in the show later. He's talking about Shorten's industrial relations reform package. We've got Kurt Wallace, friend of the show, new IPA research fellow, talking about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's Green Deal and how it relies on modern monetary theory, what that is and why it is a pretty destructive economic theory. You've got John Lloyd, our IR guy, talking about
Yeah, you're right. Very
interesting. He's talking about Sally McManus's talk about subdued wage growth in Australia and the sharing economy. That's also interesting. Got Jennifer Marahassi talking about homogenization of the Bureau of Meteorology.
Dr. Jennifer Marahassi.
I'm really dropping the doctors. Mm. All right.
They worked hard for those.
They did. And I worked hard not to say them. It's just so obvious to say it. And you've also got Gideon Rosner's article in The Spectator Australia this morning about the Peter Ridd scandal. So if you do want to hear more about that, you can read Gideon Rosner's article on ipa.org.au and make sure you're checking back regularly because we've got good stuff coming up every day. So we're now going to interviews with Tom McDonald and John Roskam. But before we do, thank you guys so much for listening to this podcast. 100 episodes, that's nothing to sniff at, Pete. It isn't.
That's true.
We've had over 200,000 downloads since we started this. It's been awesome. So thank you guys so much for listening, downloading, subscribing, staying with the show, and recommending it to all your friends and family. Keep doing it. Keep spreading the word. Word of mouth is the best way to grow a podcast, so just keep putting it out there. And if you are listening through Apple Podcasts or iTunes, head on over to our page and give it a 5-star review. It helps us bring more people into the show. You can also leave a comment, maybe a tip for the show. And if you are listening to the IPA's Looking Forward podcast, make sure you are doing the same thing there with the 5-star review. And if you are listening through the IPA website or anything else, that's great. But it's probably easier for you and definitely better for us if you make us part of your feed on any of the podcast apps that you use. Just subscribe. It's all free. And Looking Forward is all free. Great Books is all free. It's all good. Just make us part of your feed. It's going to be a lot easier for you to listen to our stuff. Now, Nina, if people want to become members of the IPA, if they want to support our work, where can they go?
Well, you can go to the ipa.org.au and click on the donate button if you like to donate. Or if you want to become a member instead, which is very good, I'll click on the join button and start it as low as $22 per year. You can become one of the loudest voices of freedom in Australia.
Very cool. Let's go to those interviews now. Okay, we are now joined, and Peter is very excited about this one. We are now joined by the Melbourne Demons full forward, Tom McDonald. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Don't worry about Dave Rubin. Don't worry about Dennis Prager. This is the interview we've been waiting for. Yeah,
Douglas Murray, sorry to hear about it. Anyway.
No, they were good too.
Yeah. Sorry, Tom. We'll start off with a bit of Melbourne chat. Sorry. Just wrapped up the preseason. The JLT series is finished. So how do you think Melbourne's looking at the moment?
Oh, we're a little bit disappointed with how we're going. We're not just not clicking all together at the moment. So it's been a positive preseason, but we're just sort of 5% off with everything at the moment. And part of that's got a few guys come back from injury, and it's a limited preseason for us. So we're just a little bit clunky, but it's not the end of the world. So we're pretty positive. We had a few injuries in the weekend we're a little bit disappointed with and a bit unlucky with a few guys, but it's sort of you just got to deal with it at the moment. But yeah, we're 2 weeks to really get ready for round one, and I feel like we'll be in a pretty good spot by then.
That's weird, because off air you said you were definitely going to win the premiership this year, Tom, so you've toned it down. That's good. So we'll give you another one that's a hot topic at the moment. Do you like a night grand final or a day grand final?
I honestly don't care. Not night grand final. I don't want a night grand final because it's too late for everything that goes with it.
Well, it's a long pro game.
I hate playing night games because the day is so long.
Really?
You can't walk around too much. You can't sit down too much. So you're just trying to fill the day in. So don't make it a night grand final, but twilight would be okay. I honestly don't really care too much.
Yeah, fair enough. We should explain actually what Australian footy is to our international
listeners.
We've got
a lot of international listeners and listeners north of the Victorian border who might be a bit confused, but anyway. Yeah.
Google Aussie rules.
Yeah. Just Google that and then come back to the show later. Anyway, so we were both at a similar event. Oh, we were at the same event recently. We were both at the Jordan Peterson Tour, which took place in Melbourne, and he was going around. So first off, how did you find that? For me and Peter, it was crazy seeing 5,500 people there for a clinical psychologist.
Yeah.
How did you find it?
I really enjoyed it. I think he was in Australia, was it a year or two ago?
Yeah.
And I missed it, or I hadn't even found him by that stage. So when I saw he must have tweeted or Instagrammed it that he was coming back, I thought, geez, I better get on straight away and see if there's tickets. And I think I got one of the last few that was for the first show and only show, and a couple of the guys came along with me, but really enjoyed it. For someone that I've seen, not all of his stuff, but read his book and watched a lot of his lectures on YouTube or listened to his podcast. It wasn't as though it was any groundbreaking stuff on the night, but it was really cool just to see it in person, sort of see his mannerisms and what he's like when he walks around. And that was really interesting, but it wasn't like it really was anything real different on the night.
Yeah,
Did you feel the same thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Very intense. Like the last half hour was just this crescendo. He's nearly crying at some points.
Yeah.
You definitely get the full experience, that is for sure.
Yeah, we should talk about Jordan Peterson for a few minutes before we get into 3 hours of D's chat. But what interests you about Jordan Peterson? As a young guy yourself, a lot of people look up to you. What is the thing that makes you get involved with that, something like that?
First of all, on the guys thing, I don't really understand why people say he's a young men only guy. Yeah,
that's an absolute
My partner listens to him and absolutely loves him, thinks he speaks sense and reason with a lot of things. I don't even know where I came across him. It must have been a podcast somewhere where he was a guest on someone. It might have been Joe Rogan. It might not have been. And then just a bit of mucking around on YouTube, watching different videos, and then read his book. But I just find that he puts things in a really reasonable way. He's not too dramatic in any direction with any topic. The way he talks about finding meaning in life, I find really appropriate, and that it's not about being happy, but about sort of going through the journey of what life is like and finding a reason to keep going forward. And I sort of, with football for me, I find it that winning is awesome for the half an hour after the game, but then it's forgotten about. You go home and you realise my body hurts, it's killing me, and I've got to get up tomorrow and start training again. And it's
the same thing about podcasting. We come home exhausted. It's just a physical journey. We know exactly what you're talking about.
Can't walk up the stairs, I can imagine.
Yeah, from one elite athlete to another.
But I that sort of resonated with me because it's fun to win for a little while, but like, why am I doing it if it's for happiness? Because most of the week is unhappy and finding a way to be better. And so it puts things in perspective of that it's about, why am I playing football? Why am I doing it? And we have a bit of a thought at the footy club that the reason we play is that we bring joy and happiness to those around us, and that's the supporters, family, like seeing mum and dad in the change rooms and stuff after a win or a loss, like that sort of thing's pretty special. And whether he's probably not intending it for elite athletes, but in my life that resonated with me.
Yeah.
And I find it and then a lot of his other stuff I just find really interesting. I love psychology. I really enjoy the way he talks about the big five personality traits and how that impacts your way in the world. And so there's a lot of different aspects. I don't agree with everything he says. I'm not a religious person at all, and so I don't really grasp any of the stereotypical archetypes he talks about with Cain and Abel. I don't know who he's talking about, so I don't like everything, but I just find a lot of things in my life he's quite relevant for.
Yeah, there's one of Jordan Peterson's 12 rules that I did want to ask you about, because I want to hear about it from the perspective of a professional athlete. And that's one of the rules, which is compare yourself to who you were yesterday, not who others are today. And imagine in such a hyper-competitive world where you've got the Coleman medalist for leading goal kickers, you're up there, you're seeing all the other forwards, or maybe you're seeing like the defender you're going to be up against next week, or some of the Melbourne greats of history. Like, it must be really hard to just try and stay in your own lane, just try and think about how am I improving as a footy player rather than like seeing all the guys of the people around you.
Yeah, that's one of the hardest things to do, and it comes with recognition, media, with money. You're worried, like guys are worried about, what about my contract versus the other guy? Is this equal that he gets paid more than me and he's been playing terrible for 8 weeks? Like stuff like that. And although it's never really talked about, you can tell that it's still always an uneasiness with certain things. Why is this guy getting picked in the team when I reckon I've been playing better in the reserves or whatever it may be? So it's a very relevant one. It's very hard to actually do in practice. Because you're always you're competing against your own teammates for a position, and you're competing against opposition every week. So it's such a competitive industry, yet it really is. You're fighting against yourself mostly.
Yeah, yeah. Another rule I was going to jump on is, one of them's like, another rule is assume the person you're listening to might know something you don't. And we're talking about contracts here, and we were talking about it before. We're now coming to a point in AFL where players are starting to be paid more than coaches, and players have like longer contracts than coaches. There's nothing wrong with you. You've always been a player that will play wherever the coach says. Like, you started a defender, now you're forward and you're playing wing. But do you think there's going to be starting to be players that can sort of start to tune out coaches just because they're more secure and they think they know more than the coach?
Don't think so. I don't think it's at the stage of like the NBA where a player has so much importance and they're so crucial to winning where they are more important than anyone in the business. So it's never going to be that level with those 18 players on the field. But players, not necessarily in the same way, but they may be getting criticised being in poor form by the coaches, and they almost just sort of get so down themselves they give up on listening and just say, I'll do it myself or do it my own way. And I've been through that stage before where you're in a poor run of form and it just feels like everyone's got their bit of advice for you, yet it's and you're just sort of going nowhere, you're treading water. Yeah. So you go through that stage, but it's almost when you let go and you open yourself up to a bit of feedback or a bit of let's just go back to basics and start again that you can actually move forward and be and trust that other people have got your best interests at heart. Because sometimes, like I've been through it, especially when I was a bit younger, that I didn't trust that the coaches or fitness staff had my best interests at heart in certain situations with training or whatever it was. But and they can still make mistakes, but I sort of learned that they're trying to do the best thing for me as well.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, no, I don't think we will have an issue like that. I don't think the money's ever going to be that big or that the player can have that much importance. But it's important to take control of your own career, but it's important to be open to feedback, open to learning and working with your coaches, knowing that they're trying to help you as much as you want to get yourself ahead.
So we talk about on the podcast a fair bit how this kind of middle-aged psychologist is talking about Cain and Abel, as you said, is unimaginably popular. Why do you think that is? What's your opinion on that? Is it something we're crying out for?
Yeah, I think he's not afraid to talk about topics. It can be a little bit delicate. Mm-hmm. I think he's very popular because he puts things in an easy to understand way and he's very articulate. He speaks in facts only. He doesn't assume. He, coming from a clinical psychologist background, he always talks about study, things that are confirmed by studies and not just some random small one, but longitudinal sort of important research that has been done. So I feel like that's important. But the main thing is that he's relatable, I think. Talks about topics that are important, but never, how would I put it? I don't think he's ever too harsh to someone. He sort of sees both sides of the coin, yet still has his opinion in where he sits.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. That was a very good Jordan Peterson pause there.
Yeah, that was there was gravity to
wait,
it.
Wait, wait for
I leaned in. It was like, man, these next words are going to be fantastic.
Let the thoughts come to you.
No, yeah, that's I wish I could talk like him. He's very, his use of language is incredible.
Yeah, yeah. And just like the pauses as well, to just be on a Q&A where it's just so, like, I don't know if you saw him on Q&A and if you avoided it, well done.
I listened to the podcast. I didn't see it.
All right, fair enough. But just like in a
didn't
show
really go very far, did it?
No, it did not. But in a show format where it's like, you know, you've got 1.5 minutes to just still just be like, all right, it'll take 5 seconds just to think about how I'm going to answer this. I was like, man, this guy's a confident dude. Anyway, I'll move on to, so basically we're talking now about Jordan Peterson and the effect he can have on, you know, like, the goal of happiness and the formation of like, how do you approach life? Now, a huge issue in footy at the moment is the mental health of young players. And I can't imagine it's like, you know, the easiest environment to be in when you're in your mid 20s and suddenly everyone's looking to you to be a role model in society. And like, so would you be recommending other players like listen to what Jordan Peterson says or something like that?
Yeah, we've got a few guys who came along on the night I went and who are interested in what he says, but in terms of the mental health stuff, I think that there's definitely guys in footy clubs that have mental health issues and can be quite serious. And while I do agree it's a problem in the game, I think there's a level of it that you need to expect in professional sport or in any high-performing industry. You need to have stress and you need to find a way to get through it. This doesn't mean that the people who are really struggling don't need help. And there's guys who I've seen have had that and there's guys who have problems with drugs or alcohol because of it, or there's guys who have problems with drugs or alcohol, irrelevant of mental health problems, I think. But, yeah, I think there's an aspect of just because I've had a bad day or a bad game or I'm a little bit stressed out, I don't think that's a mental health issue. That's an everyday problem that everyone has, and we should be helping these guys, which I think I know our footy club's pretty good with this. We've got two psychiatrists there on hand, and one of them's part of the AFL Players Association network, who's one of the best going around. They're trying to help us deal with things and how do you get through these? How do you deal with drops in form and not let it affect the rest of your life? And then how do we coach up the rest of your life that actually will help your football as well? So while I think there is an issue, it's not a league-wide issue that 90% of players have it, and it's definitely not 90% of players are taking illicit drugs, which frustrates me as someone who's never touched a drug in his life that I'm tarnished with the brush that I must be taking drugs because I've said that there's mental health problems in the AFL. So that gets a little bit frustrating, but you sort of have to wear it, I guess.
So I was on a D's fan forum where actually that's how I sort of came to realise that you'd attended the Jordan Peterson event, and some people, quite a few people were like, oh, I can't believe, like, I'm disappointed that one of our players would go to something like that. And other people were like, well, I can go to whatever he wants. And so, anyway, I was just going to ask, like, were you aware of that, that there's, like, a little bit of criticism, and why do you think that is?
I had a couple of people hit me up on Twitter. And
that, yeah, I thought so. That's right. Yeah.
There was a reporter, actually. I can't remember what his name was. And I replied to him. I said, like, sure, like, what's, surely not. Like, what's the issue here? And he said he retweeted a paragraph from a article that was written by someone. And I said, is this the only paragraph, the only article you've read? And he pretty much confirmed that. That
yeah, exactly.
And so that's, that frustrates me a bit, because if you're not going to read things in context, context or listen to them in context, like, don't bother to have opinion. Like, why write to me to criticise?
Yeah.
I don't think it was actually to me. Someone else retweeted it to me, so maybe he wasn't doing it directly. But it sort of frustrates me a bit, because I wouldn't go out of my way to go and have a crack at someone for going to something different, whatever it may be. So that's a little bit annoying, but...
Yeah, it's a weird thing in society where it's like, to be a fan of anyone, you now have to be a fan of literally every single thing they've ever done. Like, if they make one mistake, you have to disown every other part of their existence.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you know, the Kevin Hart Oscars thing, like, the guy makes some pretty bad jokes 10 years ago, but suddenly now the person he's become, irrespective of any change he's had, he can't host the Oscars anymore.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, back to the, like, you were talking about how the expectations of someone in society. I just want to know, what was your, like, welcome to the AFL moment of, like, you know, seeing all these kids with a number 25 on the back? Like, that must have been pretty weird.
It's only sort of happened the last couple of years, having been a forward. No one respected me as a defender. So, but we had a family none day yesterday, and there was, you know, 10 kids come over with number 25 on their back, which is pretty cool, which doesn't normally happen. Normally it's only Nathan Jones or Jack Viney you've got the number on the back. So that was cool, but...
After the after what you did to my 2017 Supercoach season, I will have the 25 on the back of my jersey any day of the week.
Yeah, it's not for me. If you're a really high draft pick, I think you wear that a bit earlier, and especially when you're in school in year 12, where every kid at school knows you're going to be picked in the top five or whatever, like you're the superstar. That's a different lifestyle to what I had. I was a good school footballer and played TSC Cup, but I wasn't even expected to be drafted. So
really,
yeah, I was a late. I was a pick number 53, so yeah, I was pretty late. And
crazy.
Like, kids at school knew who I was when I played for the school footy team, but it wasn't like I would be recognised. Like, a Christian Petracca, when he was at school, was expected to be the top pick, and he would have had a lot more expectation going in.
Yeah, I went to an APS school, and, like, we had some, when there was, like, a big draft pick in the year, there would always be a few guys in suits who'd be going, like, that's a recruiter for a team. That's crazy, yeah.
So you're obviously quite an articulate guy, and you think about things. Who do you have the big philosophical debates with down at the club?
Oh, we got a couple of guys.
Is it Petracca?
No, it's not Petracca. Although we get along very well. I find a way to get along with him in a different way. We love talking about movies and funny movie quotes, Will Ferrell in particular. But like, I spent a lot of time with Aaron Vandenberg. We talk about different issues. And
because he went with you, didn't he?
He went, yeah, and Sam Frost as well. Former teammate Colin Garland was probably one of the most articulate guys I've ever met, and still a good friend. He's a guy that if there was anything really serious to talk about, he'd be the one to talk through.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a brilliant speaker and a brilliant thinker. He'd probably be a perfect guest on the show, actually. So,
if you could get him in Tassie, that'd be fantastic.
Get him on.
Yeah, he's down in Tassie, so it might be a bit hard. But, yeah, they're probably three of the main ones.
Yeah, cool. So last sort of area I'll touch on, and then Pete gets his uninterrupted D's chat, which I know he's looking forward to.
Makes me nervous. I don't know what to ask. 48 questions.
So many options. In American sports, it tends to be like this idolization of the individual athlete. Like, you get like the diva wide receivers, like Antonio Brown at the moment, or like the grumpy NBA players on Instagram and Twitter. Like, there's a lot of attention that's drawn to how people are unhappy or like the individual player.
Do you think that's the social media side? That I saw the commissioner, Adam Silver, had the interview with Bill Simmons at the Sloan conference, and he thinks that phones have made a big difference to... He said the age of anxiety, I think.
Yeah,
you
say.
Do you think that's the case? Or?
I kind of think, yeah, it's a tough one, but it's like, I just don't get the, if you're Kevin Durant, Kevin Durant, for people who don't know, is like the second or third best player in the world, if not the best.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems that he browses Instagram comments pretty much every day looking for haters to go back at, and he was busted having his own burner accounts to fight people in the comment section. It's just a really weird, I can't imagine it would be like, you're on the court, 20,000 people screaming your name, and then you immediately go and you're just sitting there in silence because you got your headphones on. Like, that'd be weird to be a part of. Yeah. I'm ranting. I don't quite know if I answered any of the
questions. I think so.
I'll be asking the questions around.
I don't know the answer to it, but I found it kind of interesting thinking, having, like, I'm a professional athlete, but not on the level of what those guys have to deal with in terms of scrutiny, money, expectations. And I see that we have similar issues where guys are on their phones a bit, but I reckon after games, there's a group of guys that do, if we're on an away trip, we all sit on the bus and just talk and laugh. But there are guys who are on their phone constantly straight away, like Twitter.
Yeah, right.
AFL app, check their stats sort of thing. Like, and I reckon it does play a part, but I'm just sort of don't know what the answer is. And the thing of the grass is green on the other side for all these guys who want to switch teams. Are you actually going to be happier when you go to the other team? And
yeah,
I think it's a part of staying with the same team that when you finish, there'll be a real sense of satisfaction that comes from that. And
yeah.
Like you're a part of that forever. And so I reckon the guys who change teams, now I'm not saying you shouldn't change teams for certain situations, but if it's somewhere you want to be, I feel like there's so many good things that can come from having stuck with the team all the way through.
Tim Duncan career path.
Yeah, Nathan Jones has done it with us. And I just feel like there's things that you could never get no matter what situation happens in another team.
Who are the D's would have a burner account? Name names.
A burner account, while you think of a burner account for people that don't know, is like you create a fake Twitter account just to argue with people online.
Yeah.
And it can't be linked back to you.
Nuna's got 7.
Clayton Oliver could, just because he loves arguing back, but I don't think he'd actually do it.
We've given him some ideas. So, no, well, obviously I'm a massive D's fan, and September last year in the standing area of the MCC, a couple of beers before the game. Now, the D's are statistically a very accurate goal-kicking team, but can have an off day. Tom McDonald takes a mark, 45-degree angle, 90,000 fans. Kicks the goal, right, which gets us going.
Which game is this?
Oh, Melbourne Geelong.
Oh, right. where are we going?
Qualifying final? Was that?
Yeah, the first one, whatever the first one's called. So is that, like, we're talking about kind of performing under pressure. Was that a difficult kick for you to make? Or talk us through that. We're pretty pumped up.
I was pretty excited once I kicked
chest
it.
Chest bump. But I did a few chest bumps as well, so.
So you go through patches. Like, I missed a sitter on the weekend and I had a patch for 2 or 3 weeks where I couldn't kick one. Mm-hmm. And you don't even know why.
Yeah.
And it can be literally just you're overthinking it sometimes and going back to basics. But that one, I reckon I can tell when I run in whether it's going to be a goal or not, with how my body feels. Am I loose or am I tense? Mm-hmm. How do my arms feel? One of the coaches always says, like, if I can see the veins in your bicep, you're going to miss because you're too tense. And
I can see them now.
Whereas I think you're just ripped, to be honest. No, if it's stressing. I think it's you're a very good athlete.
No, so creepy. You can tell the difference. Like, when you really, like, it's like you're locked up and your body doesn't want to do it. Yeah, so on that one, I knew it felt good from the moment I dropped it.
All right, I just want to quiz you, Pete.
Okay.
Of all the questions you could have asked Tom McDonald, it was one single kick.
Yeah, well, I don't know where to start. I've got another one. Okay. So obviously,
hopefully it's better.
You know, I lost my park cricket semi-final yesterday. And you guys lost the prelim last year. Can you just, like, help me get through the next few days? Like, give me a few. How do you come back from sort of the penultimate week loss?
Well, the first 3 or 4 days. The first day we finished up and went home. But it's pretty much we go and have a few beers for the next couple of days. We meet at a pub at 1 o'clock.
Tick that off.
And everyone knows about Mad Monday, but it's sort of Mad Monday's disappeared and it's turned into let's catch up and have lunch and have a beer together. And we literally just sit around and there's no phones, like no one will have phones out. And it's kind of a nice feeling to just enjoy each other's company with no stress. And we just hang out for a day or two.
Yep.
Pretty much drinking and at the pub having a Palmer, which we don't do very often year. So that's kind of it's one of the best times of the year of de-stressing and it's kind of all over. Although you're so disappointed with the way it's finished because we haven't done it where we've won the last game of the year. So it's a bit of it's the end, but it's disappointing as well. So it's an odd feeling, but that'd be my recommendation. Go and get a Palmer together on the Monday night. Or
sounds good. I'm out of here.
That's Tom McDonald's one rule for life. On Monday. All right. Tom McDonald, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck this year. Hopefully you don't do as well as the Tigers, but hopefully, you know, you guys are in the mix in September.
Just around the mix. That'd be good. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Thanks, mate.
Okay, we now welcome back onto the show our boss, IPA Executive Director, John Roscombe. Always a pleasure. Welcome back.
Great to be with you, James. Great to be with you, Peter.
Always. Everyone's got to behave themselves now. The big boss is here.
Sorry,
no swearing, Nina.
Nina.
We're all looking at you, Nina.
I'm
All right, cool. So 100th episode, and we're sort of just reflecting on, like, Peter and I have taken a bit of time out of the show to talk about that, but we want to hear about it from your perspective as head of the IPA. You've overseen a huge digital transformation on the IPA. It's this podcast. It's also Looking Forward. Great books you and I did last year with Andrew Bolt. How have you found the digital transformation over the last few years?
Well, you and Peter have been a key part of what we're doing, speaking semi-seriously. I think we're at a 1440 stage in the same way as Gutenberg, and the printing press changed how we engage in debate, how we discuss ideas, how we communicate with each other. That is what is happening right now with the internet, with podcasts, with the ability to sit on the train going to work and watch videos and engage in social media. I think it's fantastic. And the role of the IPA is to participate in that debate. Last year, we celebrated our 75th anniversary, the age of doing 100-page reports and sending them to politicians and having those reports sit on the shelves unread has changed. We can now get to people in many different ways, and we can get to people in huge numbers.
Oh, I know that a lot of people think this is like a negative thing, particularly people that actually work in mainstream media, but I think you think this is a good thing, isn't it?
I think it's the democratisation of the media, and it's the democratisation of communication. If you were part of the mainstream media and you were a overnight editor at a major newspaper or a news editor at a major TV channel, you'd hate the loss of power. You would hate the loss of the authority to determine what people see and what people read and to determine the news agenda. Now people have a myriad of sources to go to look at, to read. I think it's wonderful, and we can talk about the consequences of that, and I think there are consequences. I think you can have a tendency to just read and watch everything that you agree with.
Yeah.
But I think that is far preferable to the idea that one or two or three people make the news, because they don't. We all make the news and we all participate.
So people always say, oh, you know, you have a tendency to read and stuff, just stuff you agree with. But, I mean, surely that could have happened in the past as well. Like, if you bought the Fin every day, you're not buying the Age. Is that not the same thing?
Well, I agree. And certainly if you had a left, liberal, progressive view, you had lots of opportunities to read and view things that you agreed with. If you were slightly more conservative or classically liberal or libertarian, the outlet for those ideas was much less. And as we discovered with the development of Fox News in US, who would have thought that more than 50% of Americans might be conservative in some way? So this is what is happening in Australia as well. And what we are now able to do with mobile devices is use digital technology in a way that basically breaks up the traditional media. And what always amuses me is when you have old-time journalists in print talking about, well, we have to destroy the hierarchies of education and of economics and of every cultural institution from churches to sports clubs. They never apply that to their own cultural institution, which is ripe for disruption and should be disrupted, because by and large, the traditional media in Australia has done a pretty poor job at informing us about things.
Yeah. Have you found any, so we talk about like the society at whole, have you found your own approach to media being changed in the last few years on how you consume media?
Oh, look, the challenge is for an organisation like the IPA to maintain our outstanding research and the quality of our research and not dumb it down in any way. And we are still going to be producing 100-page reports and producing big books and producing hour-long documentaries. But what you do have to do is you have to make it interesting. With now the capacity to swipe or to tick something and move on, you have to engage people's attention much quicker. I talk about the 7-second rule. You've got 7 seconds to grab people's attention. And James, you always told me that all the great classical music that we used to listen to pick for the intros to our podcasts, we can't, because that takes up valuable listening time and we could be losing listeners by playing Bach or Beethoven when we should be getting straight into the debate. I'm very aware of that. So we need to be able to communicate in a much more sometimes attention-grabbing way without dumbing it down.
Let's have, while we're on that, let's have a transformation update from the IPA. So what are the things that the IPA is doing to be part of this transformation?
Well, the one of the key things we're doing, Peter, is our aim to, within the next 2 years, be interacting every single day with 10% of young people. So 10% of Australians between the ages of 15 and 24, it's about 300,000 young Australians, the IPA has the capacity to interact with them. So whether that is to tell them about a fantastic new Jordan Peterson video, to tell them about your greatest guest on the Young IPA podcast, to say, have a read of this tweet or even read this report or read this book. Our view is that 10% of young Australians at least are inclined to hear an alternative voice. They are inclined to hear about freedom and about personal liberty and about responsibility and the idea that human flourishing doesn't come from government. And they also want to know about our history and our heritage. They want to know about the 2,000 or 3,000 years of our legacy of achievement and freedom. So that is a very key part of what we're doing. As James mentioned, we now have three podcasts. We launched Looking Forward a few months ago. Some people ask me, are you surprised by the success of the Young IPA podcast? And I say, well, actually, not at all. There is a market for what we talk about. If we have two fantastic producers and presenters like you and James, and we have Nina behind the switchboard, and we have a whole world of guests, there's no reason why we can't keep on growing. And the fact that any single podcast might, like, on a really good day, get 5,000 or 10,000 people listening is amazing. I have people come up to me almost in the street, literally, I don't know if you can call a coffee shop a street, and say, oh, you're from the IPA. And they go, oh, yeah. And then you never know whether what they're going to say, but they say, oh, love that Douglas Murray interview. And you go, oh, you say, are you an IPA member? And, oh, no, I just came across it, just thought it was fantastic. And one of the things that we haven't touched on is we can go global. We can get the best of people anywhere in the world over the phone. I mean, one of my highlights for the last couple of months has been having Andrew Roberts, the author of Churchill, on our Looking Forward podcast. It was fantastic. He was on a book tour in Texas. We got him on the phone. We had a fantastic chat to him for an hour.
Yeah, that's the Looking Forward. I think it's like episode 2 or 3. Go back and listen to it if you haven't already. It's a really good chat, especially if you love Churchill. Pete and I have been at the IPA for a while. One thing I've definitely noticed.
How long? Too long.
You are my boss. I can't answer that. But anyway, well, probably like 7 years, like interning and then going full time. And one thing I've definitely
noticed. But you were paid as an intern.
I was paid as an intern.
Terrific Let's conditions.
Have that on the record. Terrific conditions. Can't fault it. Anyway, one thing I did notice when I started, like comparing when I started to now, is how younger our events are getting. And you talk about how there is a market for young people out there. And it does seem that we are hitting it pretty well. That's got to give you some faith that, like, you know, it's pretty bad right now with identity politics and uni campuses and the stifling of debate. But surely, like, 5-10 years from now, things are going to get better.
Oh, look, I absolutely think they are, which is why I'm so enthusiastic, not just about the future of the IPA, but about the future of freedom in Australia. Jordan Peterson, in a discussion with Dave Rubin, who gave a great interview for this podcast, talked about the fact that, for example, you mentioned universities. University culture is actually determined by a very small proportion of people, 2 or 3% of people who are loud and who are committed, and good on them for believing what they do. I don't share their views, and many other people don't share their views, but they determine the culture. What we are finding is, and it's a trite phrase, but it's true, it's the silent majority, and it doesn't even have to be the silent majority. It can be 20 or 30 or 40% of young people don't share those views. They don't want to be told how to think. They want to know about their history. They want to know about their future. They want to know what it is to be a young person growing up in Australia and being part of the world. And we are seeing this more and more. We've got now something like 2,000 young members. We have 13 campus coordinators, which is a phenomenal number. We've just had orientation weeks around Australia with dozens and dozens of young people joining up to the IPA. And my view is that the best ideas will win out. And at the moment, when people say at Sydney University, for example, your debating team has to be based on a diversity quota, and people are going to be judged not on their ability or their performance, but by their skin colour or their gender.
I think that was the Martin Luther King quote. It was something to that effect.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, he famously said, I don't want my children to be judged by their skin colour, which is now what we are doing. Most Australians reject that. Most young people reject that. Most young people know that there's a whole world of ideas that they want to engage in, and sometimes if they're at school or at university, they're going to be offended. They're going to have some comfortable ideas thrown at them. But that's the point.
And to bring that back to what we were talking about at the start with podcasting, which is, you know, for a long time in my friendship group, I was always the sole sort of political one. But now I'm getting people that never really cared about politics, never really read about it. But through podcasting, like, they'll say, oh, did you see the Jordan Peterson or Ben Shapiro, or Dave Rubin, all these guys? They're starting to wake up and go, because they see these things happening in uni. They go, that doesn't agree with me, and I want to find out the other side. And there seems to be this big awakening.
Absolutely. And there's lots of young people, lots of things young people can do in the privacy of their bedrooms. One of them is watch Dave Rubin, is listen to Dave Shapiro, is get hold of a Jordan Peterson podcast. And this is a, listen to the Young IPA podcast. This is a big change, which is no longer is the mainstream media telling us what to think and what to read. But, and I notice this as a parent myself, the control that parents have over what their children are listening to and doing is changing and is being diminished. And when my 9-year-old son, when I ask him what does he want to be when he grows up, and he says he wants to be an internet star or a professional gamer, you know, I have challenges, but we will adapt and we will change and we will deal with these things. But I think that is far preferable to the alternative of read The Guardian this morning and think nothing else and read nothing else.
Have you ever played Fortnite?
You put me on the spot. I haven't played Fortnite quite as much as my 9-year-old son would like me to, but I have played Fortnite and I'm pretty familiar with every new season that's coming out.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. And when he's good and he does his homework or he helps around the house, I will say, I'll give you 50 cents so you can buy a new skin.
Well, I have absolutely no idea what that means, but so you're more ahead than me. What? So you had the Great Books podcast last year. What's next specifically for JR in this world?
Sneak
peek.
There's a couple of things. We're committed to a new initiative at the IPA this year, the IPA Academy. Mm-hmm. We're going to be taking 20 young people and we're going to be talking to them about history, about economics, about philosophy under three key strands of the miracle of the individual, the morality of markets and the ebbs and flows of history, because we need people to know that as easily as we can gain our freedom or as hard as we can gain our freedom, we can lose it. And that is going to be a model or a pilot potentially for an IPA Western Civilization course going online, so that in July we're going to have 20 people coming to Melbourne and studying and debating and listening and talking and hearing from some of the best minds in Australia. But there's no reason why in 12 months we can't have 20,000 people doing that. One of the things we have to realise is at the minute it's only about half of Australians go to university for a variety of reasons, and that half, some of them are happy to go through a course that teaches them nothing, that doesn't challenge them. There are many more people who do want to be challenged but who aren't enrolled at university and who don't need to go to university and who shouldn't be at university, but it doesn't mean that we can't be offering a program in the great ideas, in the great books to every single person. And what's been fascinating is the connection between young people and our Foundations of Western Civilization course. That is the thing that has absolutely struck home the most. So that I have people saying, oh, look, again, we'll come to the great Jordan Peterson and use him as an example. People say, you know, he's mentioned Hegel, he's mentioned Nietzsche, he's mentioned Plato. Where do I get to find out about these people? Because I tell you what, in 13 years of school, I never heard about any of these people, and I've just gone through university, and I know all about Foucault and Derrida, but I wouldn't have a clue what Thomas Aquinas talked about.
That is exactly my university course in a nutshell right there. Like,
did you come across Thomas Aquinas?
Not once, but boy, oh boy, did we read a lot of Foucault. But anyway, we'll expand out. So we'll get your opinions on a few other things that are happening around the world at the moment. One thing I do want to ask you about, so Theresa May right now, or just wrapping up her last minute chats with Juncker about Brexit deal. Pete and I discussed the details earlier in the show.
Did you? Can you explain them to me?
So basically, you've got a whole lot of people trying to make sure that absolutely nothing happens. And but I just want to get your take on it. So what are you making of where it's all at? Because apparently this is a big week for Brexit and I'm not holding my breath.
Every week has been a big week for Brexit. I mean, again, we just talked about our conversation with Andrew Roberts, who did the Churchill biography. And maybe because I'm sitting over here in Australia, I just haven't seen, and maybe it has been said, I just haven't seen the word appeaser applied to Theresa May. You read the history of May 1940 and the POMs get it wrong every single time until they get it right just at the last moment when everyone has given up hope and when nothing seems to have gone right for them. And that was the comment made about the British basically through all of their history, and I think it's going to apply this time. The idea, and again, we're talking about how the media has changed things. We have to understand that in terms of Brexit, the Parliament is against Brexit, the media is against Brexit, the big business is against Brexit, the every cultural organisation and institution in Australia, in the UK, is against Brexit. They're also against Brexit in Australia, for that matter. But that's not the view of the people. Again, if it wasn't for social media, if it wasn't for digital technology, if it wasn't for the iPhone, I don't think Brexit would have happened either. There would have been no debate. And we are just seeing the power of the establishment to thwart the will of the people. But ultimately, the will of the people will win out.
Well, to complete your analogy, so who will be Brexit's Winston Churchill if this is the darkest hour?
Well, I hope it's someone who we're going to have on the podcast very soon.
Mm.
Have you rung Jacob? Is he coming on?
I think he's on the list. He's busy at the moment.
Yeah, he's got a break.
He's trying to win. But it'll be someone like that.
Already friend of the show, Dan Hannan, maybe?
We do need Dan in the House of Commons.
Absolutely.
But it's also the case that leaders will emerge. But if there isn't a form of Brexit that is acceptable and in line with the vote of the people on the referendum, then you are going to be in for a fully-fledged constitutional crisis.
Let's move on to the coalition. What are your thoughts on that, how that's going?
I just said appeaser, didn't I?
Yes.
It's interesting that the infighting has begun before the election defeat. So they're really getting ahead of schedule with that. You've got people pot-shotting and they haven't even lost yet.
Yeah, they're already massacring the survivors.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there's a couple of points to be made about the ongoing issues of the coalition and whether it is coal-fired power stations this week or Snowy Hydro next week or last week. The coalition is coming to a tipping point whereby the interests of its voters in inner city rich seats in Melbourne and Sydney are not those of the people in the outer suburbs. They're not those of people in Queensland, and the coalition is going to have to deal with this. And in the same way as to some extent the Labor Party has been, I think, strengthened by losing some of its inner city seats to the Greens to concentrate on voters in the outer suburbs, the Liberals and the coalition are going to have to deal with this. And the question that I ask is, if the coalition continues to think that Higgins or Wentworth is worth sacrificing everything for, it is like Trump saying he has to run an election campaign to win on the basis that all of America is Massachusetts or Manhattan or Los Angeles. It's not. And what the coalition don't have at the moment, as far as I can see, is any Pennsylvania strategy, isn't any Michigan strategy, to get the middle class to vote for it, to get the working class to vote for it. The Liberal Party is nowhere. And of course, the Howard Battlers was part of that strategy, but there's been no such strategy from the coalition since Howard left.
Absolutely. All right, John, thank you so much for joining us on the show. We'll have you back on soon.
Well, I hope you have me back for the 200th and 300th, and congratulations
on joint billing with Jacob Rees-Mogg, who's to say.
And that would be very exciting because I'd love to be on with the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. and congratulations, because what you have done is lead the way for the IPA. You've taken us to whole new audiences. You've had some fantastic interviews, you've made a really important contribution to Australia. Congratulations.
Right, thank you.
Okay, thank you to Tom McDonald and John Roskam for those interviews. Really interesting stuff. Now, before we get into all the stuff that made us laugh this week, quick personal item, if I may.
Yeah, go for it.
With permission. So I am going to be in the Adelaide Fringe Festival with this show called Improv Attacks Humanity. So make sure you're coming out there. Say hi to me after the show for a drink. That'd be awesome. I do like drink. And, yeah, going to be a bunch of fun.
Yeah, I thought you were going to resign then, so...
No, absolutely not.
There you go.
Improv Attacks Humanity, Adelaide Fringe Festival will come down.
People in Adelaide, get around it.
Yes, please.
He's pretty funny sometimes.
Occasionally. I didn't make that one joke. Remember that one joke?
Mm.
That was a good time. All right, let's get into some of the stories. Now, one of the ones that made me laugh especially hard this week, Pete, was Julian Burnside and the Savage Club.
Well, James, this did make me laugh as well when you sent it through because I thought Julian Burnside wasn't like that, but apparently... Julian Burnside is a member of the all-male Savage Club in Melbourne, which is one of those old clubs that has gentlemen-only members. Yep. And you can go if you're a woman, but you can't be a member or something. I don't actually know how it works. But
look, Pete and I aren't part of the high society.
Which makes high society the poorer for it, I would have thought. So this came out on...
We'll never be the darling of the upper class.
Or any class, really. Or any class. This came out on Sky on Friday night. He was on a panel with Senator James Hume.
Jane Hume.
Yeah, Jane Hume. That's an important distinction. So he said, I joined the Savage Club 40 years ago as a very different person to the one I am today, which I didn't... What does that mean? Do you know what that means?
No, I think it just means I've grown.
Okay, fair enough. And anyway, there's questions about this, and he came out on a Saturday, suspicious timing, and said, I'm no longer a...
Can I just bring you back to the Sky interview? So he goes, I belong to a men-only club. I've been a member of the Melbourne Savage Club for 40 years.
Yeah.
And Jane Hume says, what have you done to promote the cause of women in the Savage Club? And he goes, I've argued for it, but there's resistance.
Yeah.
Thank you for your service, Mr.
Burnside. Well, it's difficult for a QC like Julian Burnside to put together an argument, so I'm glad that he did his best and won that one. But no, so and it's funny because also during this interview, he goes, Jane Hume, the senator, goes, don't talk to me about dismantling the patriarchy if you're going to be a member of the Savage Club, to which he points at her and says, don't interrupt.
Oh, so always like, what the friend of the women will say.
Well, yeah, it was a pretty... pretty funny to see Julian Burnside doing that. But I think he's just finding out that public life means your behaviour is scrutinized a bit more than if you're just a sanctimonious QC.
Yeah. I mean, she got off a bit lighter than a friend of the show, Simon Breeny, did when he got into a tete-a-tete with Julian Burnside.
Well, that's right. He's got that side.
Like, why don't you take your Savage Club and shove it or whatever he said.
That's right. So, look, I mean, I don't care if he's a member of the Savage Club. He can do what he wants.
And, absolutely
and
not.
Whilst a gentleman's club would not be my cup of tea. If blokes want to get together and do that, I don't have a problem with it. I don't have a problem with women.
Well, freedom of association. You can join whatever club you damn well want.
Obviously. And if he wants to quit, then that's good for him as well. But just pretty funny, that one, really.
Yeah, and I love this tweet where it's like, same-sex only clubs are a relic of the past. I joined the Savage Club 40 years ago as a very different person to the one I am today. I've argued for change from within, but it's too slow in coming. So I'm resigning my membership until it welcomes all people. I mean, incredible timing that would happen the day after he gets accosted on Sky News, that he would just go, you know what, change is too slow, and that's it for me.
It's a remarkable coincidence that those two
just
events
these
happened.
Two simultaneous events have happened within so much close time of each other.
Who would have thought?
And I just want to say again, Julian, thank you for your service. Resigning from the Savage Club is a very brave thing to do. I can't imagine the personal toll it has taken on you to resign from the Savage Club, the amount of mimosas that you will no longer consume. It really makes me sad.
Well, I'd like to thank him on behalf of all the women in my life.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
what a brave, brave man. All right, cool. Pete, there's also another story about, what is it, the Pentagon.
Yeah, well, this is another public expenditure story. The Pentagon spent $4.6 million on lobster tail and crab in the last month of the fiscal year in 2018 in the United States, of course. Mm-hmm. This was a report released by a watchdog called Open the Books, from which is a watchdog organisation in the United States, which looks into federal spending. And so, obviously, in the final month of the fiscal year in the United States, agencies have to burn all their cash.
Yeah,
this used to happen to me when I worked at a NGO, which I won't name. People would be like, "We've got to get rid of our budget, so we get the same budget again next year. Otherwise, they'll cut you." is spending. So heaps of spending. $4.6 million on specifically lobster tail and crab. And they've got to get a bit of criticism for this, but I reckon, you know, if you're going to stop ISIS, this is what you have to do.
Well, I think you've been gaslit, Pete, to be honest. I think you've been hook, line, and sinkered into it.
Yeah,
they're explaining this away as like, oh, this is just, we're just hemorrhaging budget. Yeah, we're just hemorrhaging budget. What do they want with all that lobster, crab, and tail?
Well,
it is the Pentagon, people.
Yeah. Yeah, there's
what
something.
Kind of nefarious things are going on deep within the Pentagon with all that lobster, crab, and tail?
Well, we don't normally do conspiracy theories, but...
I always do conspiracy theories.
I
listen to the Joe Rogan Alex Jones podcast on the weekend and I am wired in, people.
Well, they tend to rate pretty well conspiracy theories, so maybe we should get into them. But no, I don't know what they're doing.
I just think lobster soldiers, this is the only thing I'm thinking of. But no, I don't honestly believe that. But yeah, you've got to hide it a bit better than lobster, crab, and tail.
Yeah,
like, just put it in like defense spending.
Yeah. Or like,
just
like
the thing that no one's going to see.
Entertaining. How do they know? They must have gone through the receipts or something. You must be able to access the receipts.
Yeah, but just, you know. I don't know. Like people will see into that and take away that money next month, like next financial quarter.
Yep.
You've got to hide it in, AR-15 development. No one's going to question that one.
No. And if you're the Pentagon, you can say, oh, no, it's secret. Sorry.
Yeah. No, top secret.
Yeah.
No, lobster, crab, and tail, that ain't top secret. That is. We had a Friday night that went a bit out of hand.
Yeah.
The bar.
They've called in, like, Barry the accountant. It's like, Barry, we told you to change the name of this budget item.
As they're picking out lobsters just before the hearing.
So let's see.
They've still got a bit of lobster in your teeth, mate. That's going to give the game away.
This is the military industrial complex in action.
Yep. America, you have never been safer. All right. Last story I want to talk about. So you guys might remember we were talking about James Damore on the show last year.
Mm-hmm.
He was the guy that worked at Google and was asked by Google to talk about gender diversity at Google. And being an engineer, he just said what he thought instead of what he thought, instead of what Google wanted him to say. And that was the viral memo about women in tech that eventually got him fired.
I didn't realize they actually asked for...
Yeah, sorry. It was like, it's a weird one. And it's been a while since I thought about it. So
it up,
I might be getting some part of it wrong. But anyway, it was like an internal discussion about gender diversity. And he was asked, what did he think? And so he wrote basically the memo and he sent it in and they never really responded.
So
he goes, well, I still, think that this should be out there. So he started to send it around Google and then that sort of got sent around the tech world and then it got public and then he got fired.
So I didn't realize that I specifically asked for suggestions.
Yes.
Makes it worse.
He just wanted him to say, yeah, mate, sounds good.
Yeah. We should hire more women.
Yes. So anyway, Google has recently conducted a study to determine whether or not the company was underpaying women and members of minority groups. And it did find that there was one particular group that was getting underpaid consistently. And that was
terrible.
White men.
Was it specifically white men?
Yeah. Men in general. But men are being paid less money than women for doing similar work at Google. So that's I can't wait for the swift reaction from Google to stamp out this inequity and inequality.
Well, this is a bit like the Julian Burnside thing, Like, I don't care what they pay. They can pay women more than men if they want, but that's...
It's hardy ha. Yeah, I'm following it on a hardy ha ha ha. That's all I'm doing.
They've got Barry the accountant as well. I don't know what he's called, Barry. But the person who commissioned this is like...
He's got lobster tails and thousands of dollars in his upper pockets.
He's having a bad week. And it's like, Barry, this is not what this report was meant to find.
Go back in there.
Every time we try and do something like this.
Yeah, Barry just lets people down. So I feel bad for him.
Google will be interesting to see. That'll probably give us a bit of content for the next few weeks.
Yes. All right. So that is it for the show, and that is it for 100 episodes. So thank you to Tom McDonald and John Roskam for those interviews. And thank you guys so much for listening and downloading and subscribing. You've been with us the whole way. That's awesome. 200,000 downloads is pretty cool, I think. Anyway... Keep the word out going out there. Keep giving us a 5-star review. It helps new people come to the show. Keep telling your friends and family that they can download on any podcast app they use. Nina, where can people go if they want to become a member or become a donor?
Yeah, Nina.
The website, of course. The website, Pete, is ipadog.au. Mm-hmm. And click on the donate button if you like to donate, or click on the join button if you want to become a member, or do you have anyone who wants to become a member. And starting as low as $22 per year, you can become one of the loudest voices of freedom in Australia.
Very cool. Well, with this being the end of the 100th episode, Pete and I and Nina, we always make fun of each other on air, and it's always well and good nature.
Speak for yourself.
But I just think at the end of the 100th episode, we should take a moment now to say what we all mean to each other and to talk about how great it is to work with everyone else on the panel.
Okay.
See you guys next week. You know I cherish you, my love.